The Rat in the Wall by H.P. Lovecraft.
On July 16th, 1923, I arrived in the lovely English village of Anchester for the second time in my life. On my first visit shortly after the death of Alfred, my only son, in 1921, I had purchased the ruins of Exham Priory, the ancestral home of my family. I had spared no expense to have the house restored, for with my son and my wife both dead, what need had I to be careful with money? Now I was returning to live there, the first Delapore to occupy the house since my ancestor, Walter Delapore, had fled the country under scandalous circumstances in 1610.
Mr. Delapore?
Yes, sir?
Ah, Captain Norris. Good to see you again, young man. How are you?
Quite well, thank you, sir. And you?
Very well, very well. And eager to see Exham Priory.
Yes, sir. Here, let me take your bags for you. I trust your passage from Boston was pleasant.
Thank you. Yes, yes. Tell me, is the house...
Everything is ready, sir. The last workman packed up and left yesterday. I must say that they've done wonders. Hard to believe that 2 years ago, Exham Priory was only a hollow shell. Here we are, sir.
And what about the servants, Captain Norris? I suppose they've all arrived by now?
please call me Edward, sir. Yes, the servants arrived last week. I'm afraid your cook will need some time to accustom herself to Anchester.
Oh? Did Mrs. Shaw run afoul of Anchester's hospitality, then?
She has some little difficulty, but you know how clannish people in my town are.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. On my first visit here, they slammed doors in my face as soon as they heard my name. And during the war, they treated my son badly as well.
Perhaps a little at first, when he was new. But once they got to know him, all the chaps in the squadron liked Alfred immensely. When I first met you, sir, Mr. Delapore, I was afraid that you might, well, hold Alfred's death against me. I mean, I was flying with him the day that Jerry shot him down, and I saw him crash land behind the enemy line.
Oh, nonsense, nonsense, Edward. You were my son's best friend during the war. Alfred spoke very highly of you during his final illness.
I often wondered if I might have saved him, somehow landed and picked him up.
His wounds didn't kill him, Edward. No. The abominable conditions in the prisoner of war camp brought on his illness. He left home a strapping young man and returned to me a maimed invalid. His last 2 years were very difficult ones, very, very painful.
I'm sorry, sir.
The fortunes of war. We Delapores are used to that. Did Albert ever tell you of my Civil War adventure?
No, sir.
Yeah. I witnessed my grandfather's death then. The old man was 80 when he stood up to the Federal Army, all alone, and they murdered him.
You must have been quite young, sir.
Young, yes. It was in 1863. I was only 7, and yet I can recall that fire as if it were yesterday. The women screamed all around me, the slaves. I remember their terrified black faces as they howled and prayed. And my grandfather stood on the veranda, cursing the soldiers, swinging his cane at them. They set fire to Carfax, to the house where my father was born, where I was born. I remember the roaring of it, a rush of sparks when the great columns fell. My grandfather actually ran back into the burning house after he had ordered my mother to carry me to safety. He perished in that incendiary outrage. Yes, my grandfather died. My father was in the army defending Richmond. Somehow or other, my mother managed to get us through the lines to him, but after the war, there was none left for us in Virginia, and so we moved to Boston, where mother's people lived. And so, I became a stolid Yankee at last.
I'm sorry to hear about your grandfather, sir.
Let's think of the future. I'm pleased that the renovation has proceeded so well. How fortunate that you were able to oversee the work for me.
I was happy to help, sir, and and pleased that you place so much trust in me. Here we are. This is the drive to the priory. Hold on, where it's steep and winding from here to the house.
Uh-huh. I see you took my advice about the driveway. Splendid view of the valley over the cliff.
Yes, as long as you don't get too close to the edge. It's a sheer 500-foot drop to the valley floor. There's the house now, just beyond the trees.
Magnificent. Edward, you've done well. It's just like the old engraving. See how the Gothic towers and the Renaissance upper stories rest on the Saxon foundation. By George, it ought to look ghastly, and yet, look at it. Just look at it.
Thank you, sir. I have been looking at it for 2 years. But after we've settled you in, I'd like to take you down into the cellar. We made a discovery or two while working there that I think you'd be pleased to see.
Oh, good. Jenkins, come help with the luggage.
Yes, sir. If I may, sir, welcome home.
Thank you. I trust all is well.
Everything's in order, sir. The servants are installed in their quarters, and the animals arrived from London an hour ago.
Animals? I say, Mr. Delphore, you aren't going in for livestock, are you?
Hardly. Since the Crown gave all the pasturage attached to the place to your family in 1660. No. Jenkins means the cats. I have a fatal weakness for cats, I fear.
The cats are well, sir. All five of them. This way, sir.
The restoration had been a stupendous task, for little had remained of the deserted pile. It had been expensively transformed. I viewed the great rooms, wainscoted walls, vaulted ceilings, mullioned windows, and broad staircases with growing pride. Every attribute of the Middle Ages was cunningly reproduced, and the new parts blended perfectly with the original walls and foundations. Even more, the good Captain Norris had purchased antique furnishings that splendidly complemented the architecture. Norris took hours showing me the restoration until, at last, hardly suppressing a kind of manic glee, he led me down a narrow flight of stone steps into a sub-cellar, where the stonework, newly revealed after 3 centuries of rubble had been cleared away, held a surprise.
There, sir. On the keystone of the archway. What do you make of the inscription?
Div ops magna mat. Why, it's an inscription to the Great Mother, the forbidden goddess of Roman times, as if this cellar were once a chapel long ago.
Very long ago indeed, sir. About 1600 years, I should say. Of the style of the carving and the language of the inscriptions indicate the date of the 4th century, the archaeologists tell me.
As ancient as that? The soldiers of Rome built a chapel atop this cliff, then. Fascinating. Do you have any details?
Only a few. Anchester was the camp of the 3rd Roman Legion, I discovered. Professor Thigpen of Oxford believes this was the site of the Temple of Cybele, and that even earlier Phrygian priests conducted darker ceremonies here. Anyway, Exon Priory is definitely older than I believed. The Magna Mater was a druidic goddess, too. Rather makes one wonder what might lie below these stones.
And I wondered, too. But, exhausted from my recent travels, I spent the next days not in archaeological exploration, but rather in settling in. Everything seemed just as it should be, except for the indignation of Mrs. Shaw, the cook I had hired in London. Her first interview with me made her wrath plain.
Very rude they were to me at the Bikers and the Greengrocers. Who'd have told them I worked for you for the shilling you want off?
Well, they're only shopkeepers, Mrs. Shaw. Captain Norrie says their memory goes back a long way, back to when the Delafores were lords of the manor, I imagine, and they were only peasants.
Well, they said the most horrid things about your family. So they're called the Delafores...
Murderers, Mrs. Shaw?
Well, yes, sir, among other things.
The murder, they recall, took place 300 years ago, Mrs. Shaw. In 1610, one Walter Delafore killed his entire family. So the crime can hardly have any bearing on you or me.
Oh, I didn't know, sir.
Well, it's ancient history. How could you have known? The law regarded the crime so lightly that Walter Delafore went free and emigrated to America. But as you discover, the local people still resent my family. Well, if they want to be so absurdly self-righteous,
simply refuse to patronize them.
But what am I to do, sir, if I can't shop for Manchester? I mean, where am I to shop?
I'll have Williams drive you into Exham 3 times a week, at least until I have an opportunity of speaking with the shopkeepers of Manchester.
Well, it's very inconvenient, sir.
I realize that, Mrs. Shaw, and I agree with you, but we'll just do the best we can until I talk sense into these peasants, won't we?
Well, yes, sir. But I beg your pardon, sir. Do you think you can do anything with them?
I can be persuasive, Mrs. Shaw.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
I saw to it that Norris interceded on Mrs. Shaw's behalf. The shopkeepers listened to him, all right, for his family were respected landowners. In fact, I had purchased the ruins of Exham Priory from Norrie's uncle at a good profit to him. That problem solved, I began to arrange my new mode of life. My cats had traveled from Boston in fine fettle, and of them all, my favorite, the solid black fellow I had named Voodoo, seemed especially pleased to meet me here in this strange place. Voodoo, I had called him that in memory of my disgraced older cousin, Randolph Delaporte, who had disappeared from my life suddenly after the Civil War ended.
Son, you made your father very angry tonight. I know you intended no harm, but you must never speak of your cousin Randolph.
But, Mama, I just asked if we'd ever see him again. I thought he was coming to live with us for good since Uncle Peyton died.
No, he... Your father and your cousin cannot be friends. You're too young to understand.
I like Cousin Randolph. He used to stay with me on Grandfather's plantation.
Randolph is gone, son.
Is he dead, Mama? Like Uncle Peyton and Grandfather?
Yes, son. Your cousin Randolph is dead.
I learned the truth years later. Randolph had gone among the blacks after the war and was lost to us. Years afterward, he wound up in New Orleans, the one scandal of my immediate forebears. Randolph had become a voodoo priest in a cult notorious for its decadent excesses. But unlike that unhappy relative, my comfortable old cat had no evil in him. For 5 days, he lay curled peacefully at my feet while I pored through local records of my family, thoughtfully collected by Norris. Jenkins, would you please bring me the large brown leather-bound volume from the library desk?
The 17th century folio, sir.
Yes, thank you. Oh, Jenkins.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you might just bring Voodoo a saucer of cream afterward.
Cream, sir. Yes, sir.
My reading was absorbing and horrifying. I began to understand why the locals seemed to shun the Delaportes and their holdings. Even before the house fell into the hands of my ancestors, the site was uncanny. Ancient records mentioned a shrine atop the great limestone cliffs where now the house stood. There had been a standing circle of cyclopean stones, coeval with Stonehenge, the site of Druidic or even Cymric ceremonies. When the Saxons had come to England, they rooted up the old monoliths and toppled them over the cliff. The first mention of the priory itself occurred in one of the Anglo-Saxon chronicles from the year 1000 A.D.
The monks did raise a priory there atop a lofty cliff. There they did flourish a right numerous brotherhood. But the people of Manchester, dwelling as they did in the shadow of that monastery, shunned and dreaded the priest. The monks did lay claim to a vast expanse of good crop land in the valley below, and there raised an abundance of coarse fare, turnips and lentils, which they tended and harvested in silence. Though the times were hard, not the least charity did these monks have for their hungry neighbors. In their turn, the folk of the valley did not steal the crops raised by the monks. No need had the priory for fences, for a great fear sufficed to exclude the frightened populace.
The priory was not destroyed by the Danes, though it must have declined tremendously after the Norman conquest. What became of the monks, I could not learn. But there seemed to be no impediment on the estate when, in 1261, Edward III granted the site to my ancestor, Gilbert de la Poix. I found little mention of him from that year until 1307, at which time a priest preached a furious sermon against him, a fragment of which Norris had found preserved in a book of medieval curiosities.
Some that be who live on high, but whose souls are fit only for the deepest pit in hell. Some that be who prey on the people, ravening as a wolf in a sheepfold. Some that be who are cursed of God himself, whose foul sins stink in the nostrils of the Most High. Such is the damnable master of Exum, Gilbert de la Porte.
I found dark hints, veiled remarks suggesting that the family had somehow been tainted by occupying Exum Priory. There was some sort of inner cult or sect in the household, limited to a few in each generation, and presided over by the head of the family. This cult kept alive ancient, forbidden practices. I found mention of one Lady Margaret Trevor of Cornwall, wife of the second son of the fifth Baron. If an old ballad were true, she had been seen on a night of the full moon, naked, her arms streaked with the blood of her victims. The presiding priestess at an eldritch and hideous sacrifice atop the cliff.
Magna Mater! Magna Mater! Artis! Dia Aragaisar Aragon! Sona! Sola! Sola! Agucetta!
Mater! Mater! Artis! Dia Aragaisar Aragon! Sola! Sola! But these ballads were the stuff of boogie tales and legendary. Though come to that, real history was scarcely kinder to my race. There was the case of Lady Mary de la Poix, who married the Earl of Shrewsfield in 1520. 3 weeks following the wedding, Earl and his mother most brutally murdered Lady Mary. Both of the slayers were absolved and blessed by the priest to whom they confessed. And they had a most curious trial.
My lord and my lady, your guilt is most clearly evident. However, the House of Lords would be remiss should we fail to note that the victim's death had been amply deserved by her most vile and unnatural appetites. We therefore commute all punishment for your deed, and further order that the records of this trial be burnt.
And save for that one brief mention, the records must have been burnt, for no further details had been adduced. The story of my immediate ancestor's crime, too, was scantily recorded. The old papers told in less than 3 sheets of narrative how Walter de la Poix murdered all 6 members of his family, was briefly imprisoned, and then went free to emigrate to Virginia late in 1610. The last event with any connection to the Delaports took place only 5 months after he abandoned the priory. In the old days, the valley was broken up into gardens, but these had fallen into rank growth. In the early spring of 1611, 2 shepherds from Anchester were grazing their flocks on the edge of the old gardens one moonless night.
Yeah, then, lads, spread out, there's grass enough for all. Here, yeah, what are you about? Off with you now and get your dinner. Time for sleeping soon.
Ah, beasts are frightened like tonight, Davy.
Aye, Willie, 'tis your anointed pile as scares them I want. Bad cess to the last of the Delaports. May he rot in the new world. May his family name die with him. Good riddance, says I.
Oh, hush, hush, Davy, listen. What's that then?
I don't hear nothing except these bleeding sheep.
Must have been the wind. Still, I'm going to bring them ewes closer over. Don't like them eating the weeds up the Delaporte's old gardens. We can stay here and watch the rest of them.
All right, then, but don't be long.
Oh, no fear of that. Here, you bloody sheep, this way. Bring them in, Shep.
Waiting the wind. Hi, Willie, what are you doing?
There's someone coming from the priory. Someone dark, black, dripping down the cliff like this. It's a god!
Don't have a fun, Willie. Willie, what's that sound? What's wrong? What? God save us! Help! Help! Get them off me! Help me!
The dying shepherd staggered into the town, bleeding, covered with 12 gnawing forms, famished rats. And the living carpet of them pursued him through the streets and spread through the village. The shepherds and two of the villagers were eaten alive by the starved rats. More lost their livestock, their stores of food. The rats dispersed through the whole countryside, and many thought that the source of the great plague that swept the country the following year were those rats. And all believed that they had issued from the ruins of Exham Priory. Most blamed the episode on my family, seeing it as a lingering curse the Delaporas brought on the people of Anchester. I read this grim account in a crumbling folio volume on the evening of July 22nd. And that night, for the first time, I was awakened from a sound sleep by the strange behavior of my favorite cat.
Voodoo. Voodoo, what's wrong with you? Settle down. What are you after? Come in. Voodoo, be quiet.
I beg your pardon, sir, but... Oh, this cat is behaving oddly as well.
It's that confounded noise that's waked him up. What do you mean, as well?
It's the other cat, sir. They're howling and stalking the wainscoting. Mrs. Shaw's upset with them.
They hear that scratching sound. By George, it's rats.
Rats, sir?
Certainly. Can't you hear it, man?
No, sir. I'm afraid I can't.
There must be dozens of them. Hundreds. You say the other cats are acting up?
Yes, sir. In the kitchen, sir.
Hand me my dressing gown. We'll get to the bottom of this.
It began a few minutes ago, sir. Mrs. Shaw came to be quite distressed.
They're after the rats, Mrs. Shaw. Where are they, Voodoo?
Huh? There it is.
Ah, get them. In the pantry, are they? Get them, boys. No rats. No rats. They're behind the walls, by God. Out of there, boys. You can't get at them there. They've gone. This is outrageous. Rats in Exham Priory?
Sir, with permission, the house is far too new to have rats.
There were hundreds of them. They were going down.
I beg your pardon, sir. Are you certain that you heard the...
Of course I am. Look, Voodoo's calm again. Rats in the walls, is it? Yes, well, we'll do something about that. Jenkins, tomorrow I'll have the gardener go into Anchester and buy traps and poisons. A couple of dozen traps, 10 pounds of poison.
There are no rats in my kitchen. I couldn't hear a thing apart from those beasts. I mean, apart from the cat, sir.
Nor could I, sir.
Well, you both must be deaf then. The cat certainly heard them.
Yes, sir.
I won't have rats in Exham Priory. See you the traps and the poison tomorrow, Jenkins. I'm going back to bed. And that will be all.
Yes, sir. Good night, sir.
I couldn't hear a thing.
Nor could I, sir.
Blocks. Must have been 1,000 of the vermin. Filthy rats. I won't have them. You heard them, didn't you, Voodoo? Yes, so did I. Rats in the walls. We'll take care of them, won't we?
But no measures that I or Voodoo could think of availed. We found the trap sprung and ratless in the morning. We put out poison, and it lay untouched. Even more maddening, none of the servants heard the sound, or at least they said they could hear nothing. But after the first occasion on July 22nd, night after night, I heard them. The rats scurrying behind the walls, always heading downward, downward, and soon I began to have hellish dreams. In my dream, I saw a vast twilight grotto. Looking down as from a great height, I saw a floor knee deep in filth. and standing in the midst of it, a white-bearded demon swineherd. He drove about with his staff a flock of flabby, fungus beasts, like pigs, but not pigs. The creature's flesh was pale white, alkanoid, as though they had lived all their lives deprived of wholesome life, and their bodies quivered with piles of fat. Then, as the swineherd paused and nodded over his task, a mighty swarm of rats rained down on the stinking abyss and fell to devouring beasts and men. From a seething ocean of blood, matted gray fur, and white flashing teeth, I saw the swineherd's face lifted in agony, and it was my face! No! No!
Are you quite all right, sir?
I was having a bad dream, Jenkins. What are you doing in my room?
You cried out, sir, quite loudly, several times.
What? What time is it?
Just past 3 a.m, sir. Do you wish anything?
No. Thank you, Jenkins. Good night.
Good morning, sir.
Well, at least the rats have stopped, haven't they, Voodoo? In the morning, I'm calling Edward Norris over here. Yes, the rats always go down. By God, Voodoo, we'll do a bit of exploring. We'll find out where they've been going, won't we?
Well, I can't see any trace of rats here. And the limestone walls seem solid enough.
And yet I hear the damned beasts night after night. They seem to be heading down. Always down. This must be their destination. I tell you, Edwards, it's maddening. I can't get any sleep.
Excuse me, sir. Are you still reading all those chronicles and family records I gathered for you?
What do they have to do with the rats?
Well, sir, they are rather ghastly reading. Perhaps they're acting upon your imagination.
There is nothing wrong with my imagination, Captain Norris. I tell you, there are rats. They sound as if they're struggling through narrow tunnels, squeezing over and beside each other in their rush downward. Perhaps streams of water might have eaten away passages in the walls.
Perhaps.
I suppose there's nothing under this subcell.
Yes, as a matter of fact. There is a crypt. We discovered it in clearing the foundations. Here, help me lift this stone.
This must be it. The place where the rats go. By George. Look at the architecture here. Roman, pure Roman. Why didn't you show me this?
Well, to tell you the truth, sir, I don't like the feel of the place.
Huh?
Look at that stone block. Can you make out the inscription in this light? Here. Let me hold the lantern for you.
Yes. Pegetia prop temp dona el preac vis pontific atis. Atis. Atis, the eastern god? I thought the Romans went to great ends to wipe out the worship of Atis in all their holdings.
Have you read Tertullus? The worship of Atis was mixed in with that of Cybele and with that of the great old ones. Oh, you're quite right. The Romans despised the cult of Atis. The practices were degenerate. Human sacrifice. Well, perhaps you can understand why I didn't tell you about this place. Anyway, there's no sign of rats, not even down here.
No. But look at the lantern flame. It's wavering in a draft that comes from below, from the cracks around the base of this altar. Beneath the altar, yes, that's where the rats will be. But the immense block of limestone seemed immovable. Norris and I talked it over. And at his suggestion, we traveled down to London to speak with experts. Among my earlier stay there, I had met an astute young woman, Lady Alice Ashton of the Society for Psychical Research. Lady Alice was a clairvoyant whose special gift was detecting psychic impressions from physical remnants. She was most interested in the story. At Norris' suggestion, we also consulted the renowned archaeologist Sir William Brinton, whose discoveries in Egypt and Mesopotamia had made him a celebrity of science. Somewhat to my surprise, he and his colleague, the paleontologist Dr. Thomas Thornton, took my story quite seriously. Brinton had us to lunch to discuss the problem.
The Rat in the Wall by H.P. Lovecraft.